welcome to another edition of Warrior Connection. Veterans, as always, you get great respect, great education from the Progressive Radio Network, and we're always going to strive to do that for you. Today, our guest is John Bach. He's head of GSL Defense Training. He's an incredible teacher and everything else. I've taken his classes. What we're going to talk about today is personal defense, force-on-force training, and how do you protect yourself and your family, given the world situation. John, welcome to Warrior Connection.
Well, thank you for having me. It's good to be here today, Doug.
Well, John, tell us a little bit about GSL Defense Training, what courses are available, and then we'll get into the meat and potatoes wherever you want to go, sir.
Well, GSL Defense Training has been around for just shy of 20 years now. We teach in Central Illinois and classes across Central Illinois and even Burlington, Iowa. And like I said, we've been around for a long time. Our specialty for many years was teaching people the fundamentals of NRA personal protection in the home and similar type training to help them get a Florida non-resident concealed carry license or to get licenses from other states. And since we started that, we've since added some intermediate level pistol craft classes as well as urban rifle, defensive rifle type classes. And our latest offering is a force-on-force class where we take people out and give them the opportunity to experience force-on-force training, that relatively new area of training that the military and law enforcement have used very successfully to train their people in the latest and how to handle critical situations. We do that for civilians. As far as I know, there's maybe a dozen class or a dozen schools in the whole nation that offer this type of training to civilians, and we're one of them. We've got a great cadre of instructors. We've got a great location at a summer camp near Bloomington to teach, and we've also got lots of dedicated alumni who share our interest in training people to protect and defend their families from violent attacks. So it's a unique combination of resources that we have available and experience with our experienced crew of instructors and been to a lot of schools, done a lot of things, learned a lot of things, and we're here to share that with people to help them be better citizens and safer for their families.
It's really critical. It's important to understand, too, the instructors you have are a tremendous amount of experience in law enforcement. So you've got sheriff's department, you've got local police, you've got FBI agents. Your instructors go the gamut. So it's not somebody that's sitting behind a desk saying, well, I think these are the people that know.
No, Illinois had 42 instructors in the state of that had trained. I think it was 10 or more people the year before we got concealed carry here in Illinois. And of those 40, probably close to a dozen of them teach for GSL defense training. Again, we've been doing this for almost 20 years. We had a lot of experience doing this. And after the concealed carry law passed here in Illinois, we were of course the last state to get right to carry, but after the law passed, I think at one point we were up to about 3,200 or 3,300 instructors. So there were a lot of people that were just fresh out of school, so to speak. They had just gotten their certification and were starting to train people in all aspects of right to carry. And some of these people, quite frankly, were very good. In fact, we've picked up a few of them and added them to our group of instructors. But a lot of these people are just reading off of PowerPoint slides, and their classes are very minimal in what they provide. They satisfy the letter of the law, which is what's necessary. But in terms of a high quality class, some you could do better than 16 hours of PowerPoint. It gets kind of hard on the rear end.
Yeah, everybody's been PowerPointed to death, especially in the military. I mean, this is hands on. So you're sitting there going through the fundamentals in the classroom, but you're getting out into the field, getting hands-on training as fast as possible with one-on-one instruction. So it's not that the individual is turned loose with either a handgun or a rifle or a shotgun. He's got one-on-one instruction the entire time, correct?
It's not exactly one-on-one, but it's pretty close. You know, we've got, I think, 19 instructors with our team right now. In an average class, we'll have between a dozen and 15 of them there. And typically, you know, 1.5 shooters per instructor is fairly typical. And in this force-on-force class that you're wanting to talk about today, we have more than one instructor for each shooter simply because we have different stations or different scenarios that the instructors are in charge of. And then when we go to do the live fire component of the class, all those instructors come to bear, and we've only got 8 people shooting at a time. So you've got a lot of instructors surrounding everybody. In fact, the last class, somebody lamented the fact that they were getting instruction from too many different directions. And I kind of had to chuckle at that. That was the first time I've ever seen a critique in a class where people complained about getting too much help while they were shooting. So it's one of those things. You're kind of damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. But we're proud that we're able to offer such good training from such highly qualified people. I mean, they're not all high-speed, low-drag former in their past. Yeah, we've got a former FBI agent. Yeah, we've got some law enforcement people. Yeah, we've got lawyers. We got engineers. But we've also got farmers and teachers. And it's more important that these people are able to communicate with the average Joe or Jane Sixpack that wants to go out and learn the fundamentals. It's more important that they're able to communicate with these people and teach them the fundamentals. We're not teaching them how to kick in doors and clear houses and do things like that. We're teaching them the fundamentals of how to safely and effectively use a handgun in most cases to defend their lives and that of their family and protect their homes from violent attack or violent attack out in public.
Well, what kind of threats do we have? I mean, obviously, in our, if you live in a city, you've got a different threat versus in a small town versus in a rural area. But all areas, there are potential threats we have to be aware of. And can go over some of the fundamentals on that, situational awareness and where we begin.
Well, crime is everywhere, and if you think crime isn't everywhere, you're just a victim waiting to be victimized. It's everywhere. I mean, common criminals are everywhere. You have to be aware of your surroundings when you're out in public. It doesn't matter if you're filling up with gas in the middle of the day in town or if you're at home at middle of the morning. Bad things can happen, just like they can happen late at night or on a weekend or whatever, and it's not just the bad part of town where bad things happen. They happen everywhere, and a lot of people, they're surprised when something goes bad, and, you know, you hear very commonly people say, well, he came out of nowhere. Well, no, he didn't come out of anywhere. You just weren't paying attention to what was going on around you, and that's when the guy showed up, surprised you and victimized you, and you're left to wonder what happened, and that's that's one of the things that we teach in our concealed carry class or in our personal protection in the home class. We teach the fundamentals and situational awareness. You know, be aware of your surroundings, who's around you, what they're doing, all that good stuff. And we expand upon that in our critical threat management, our force-on-force class, where we actually put the students in various scenarios. It's kind of like a golf course. We send the students off to the various scenario locations. They run the scenarios that range widely from a hotel room to a convenience store to a walk in the woods to filling up with gas, all kinds of things, using an ATM machine, going to Walmart, all kinds of stuff. And then we put them in difficult situations and force them to act to remedy the situation. And we do it in the force-on-force class on Saturday morning. We do it without any sort of real teaching or any real skills. We just kind of assess their baseline of how they handle situations, and then basically we spend the next 2 days teaching them how to handle the situations and to better handle them, and then we run them through similar scenarios on Sunday afternoon and give them a chance to have more successful outcomes. But situational awareness, even better than carrying a gun, situational awareness is something that you can do to protect yourself and your family. Again, you don't need a gun to do it. But if you pay attention to what's going on around you, you can short-circuit these criminal attacks before they happen.
Well, what do we want to look at? Say, for example, we're up at a gas station, we're filling on gas. What do we want to be watching for or looking for?
Well, kind of the first thing is to recognize that threats exist. You know, we've talked about that a little bit. Some people think that, oh, it's safe out there, I don't need to worry about it, I can leave my car door unlocked, I can leave the purse in the front seat, not pay attention to the surroundings. So first thing to do is to recognize that the threats exist. The next thing to do is keep an eye on task fixation. That cell phone you've got, your nose does not belong in it in the public. Don't be text messaging. Don't be reading your social media updates when you're out in public. If you're filling up with gas, pay attention to who's around you. Look around. Those gas pumps and the vehicles around you oftentimes will obstruct your view. Make sure you look around. Look around for somebody who's not there with a sense of purpose, somebody that's just looking around, looking for people to victimize potentially. You know, look around for people who don't belong, who aren't moving with a sense of purpose to a specific goal or a task at hand. And most of all, leave that darn phone in the car. Leave it in your pocket. Don't be text messaging. Don't be checking your social media updates when you're out in public. Otherwise, you are a victim waiting to happen.
it can be really bad. I mean, primarily you're looking at a gas station, you're filling up, and all of a sudden you see a guy walking up that didn't come up in a vehicle. He's looking for a vehicle. We're looking for either a carjacking or something else, and that has happened way, way too many times. And the guy is just wide open because the car is running or the car keys are right there, and they're, you know, filling on gas, or they left everything and went in to pay for the gas.
Actually, filling up your car with gas is one of the three most likely places that you are likely to be accosted in the course of your life. The first location is parking lots. Going to or from your vehicle into a store, of course, there's lots of cars around. There's oftentimes people around, and especially at night, but even during the day, I mean, there's vans and trucks and all kinds of stuff. People can be standing behind those and pop up on you on a moment's notice, and all of a sudden you've got a fraction of a second to react to it, especially if you're not paying attention to what's going on around you. The second most common location to be victimized in any given day is a gas station where you're filling up with gas. You're distracted. You're punching in your PIN number on the screen. You're answering questions like, do you want a car wash? Do you want to process this as a PIN the PIN number transaction for your debit card
or credit card or
cash, or you pay the cashier? I mean, you're involved in all these tasks. You're not paying attention to what's going on around you. It's an ideal location for bad guys. And the third most common location to be victimized is your driveway at home, that last 50 feet, because you're thinking about making dinner for the family. You're thinking about family things. You're thinking about everything except paying attention to what's going on. And if there's a bad guy waiting and lurking in the bushes, and you're backing into the garage, or you're pulling into the garage and you shut the garage door, bad guy can slip under the door as it's going down, and all of a sudden you got company in the garage that you were not expecting for, and mentally you're not prepared for that, and all of a sudden most people would be one of those aw shucks moments, and they just kind of freeze, and the bad guy, it's probably not his first rodeo, he's going to be all over you while you're trying to figure out how to react. So pay especially keen attention. Be aware of your surroundings at gas stations, in parking lots, in that last 50 feet to your house every night. Make sure somebody doesn't come running up behind you, or running into the garage with you, or running into the house with you and forcing your way in and turning what would ordinarily be just a simple robbery into a home invasion.
And then we got the ATM problem, too.
Doug, this
ATMs
is really,
are dangerous places,
you.
Yes, especially if they're dark, if they're closed locations that don't have good visibility. You know, unless you really, really need that money, I would go to a bank and get your withdrawal, or pay excruciatingly close detail to who's going on around you. If there's any pedestrian traffic, you don't want to be doing ATM transactions there. And certainly in busy locations or dark locations or crowded, noisy locations such as nightclubs, strip clubs, any kind of club activity, that's a bad, bad place to be using the ATM machine, because somebody can be up behind you literally and stick a knife in your rib cage before you can react, and all of a sudden you're giving them your money, and if you're not lucky, they're giving them your life as well. So, ATM machines are not a good place to be. Get your money at the bank, or get your money during the daytime. Don't be needing money from the ATM machine late at night, and certainly don't do it in a busy club or some location out in public where it's noisy, busy, and there's a lot of traffic, and somebody can segue up behind you, and all of a sudden you're getting robbed and you didn't even know what happened. Again, the common expression, he came out of nowhere. Well, don't put yourself in those situations where the guy comes out of nowhere.
And the other thing, too, a lot of these cases, you're out for a night, you need money, you're half soused, so you're not exactly moving with the swiftest.
If you're intoxicated in public, you are a crime magnet. So let that be a lesson to you. If you're out in public, limit yourself to one drink at the most, and beware of your surroundings. But, yeah, if you're drunk out in public, that's the person that's going to be victimized. And don't be young and dumb like that. Be very prudent about consuming alcohol out in public. That's not a good place to be, or consuming recreational pharmaceuticals. Again, if you're intoxicated or under the influence of something out in public, you don't have your wits about you, you are a crime magnet, and bad guys will be attracted to that, and not in a good way.
Doug?
Hey, Ray.
Hey, how you doing, Doug?
It's great.
I've been listening to this, and it's really amazing. I've worked with law enforcement. I've worked with martial arts for 25 years. I've done a lot of different things like this. And what you guys are saying, exactly what we do, we teach our students to be constantly vigilant, hyper-vigilant, because we always talk about martial arts. Everything is your friend. When you walk into a room, you can use anything for a weapon. If you know how to, a little bit about how to use those type of things. And, you know, we talk about cell phones. Well, that's the worst thing you can do is just keep your face in that. But one thing we do tell them to do is a good time to use a cell phone is when you get out of your car, go into Walmart. First thing you do when you get out of your car, you straighten yourself up, act like you're fit shape, act like you're not, not asleep. You wake yourself up, and when you walk in, you walk up with your head up in the air, and you've got your, you're looking around you. And put your money. Don't a woman doesn't need a big purse with her. It's probably she can carry a credit card in her pocket if she wanted to or something. But don't make yourself a target, because when you left the house, you didn't have a plan only to go to Walmart, get a few things, and go back home. The bad guy left his house with a plan too, and he knows exactly what he's going to do. He's going to look for the weakest link. He's going to look for the weakest person. He's going to look like somebody that he can take on, because if he gets hurt, he's out of business. And so what he does is look for weak people, just like you were talking about. But we tell a lady, if she's walking into Walmart and she happens to spot a person or persons that's kind of looking at her and makes her the hair on the back of her neck stand up a little bit, put the cell phone to your ear and call somebody and just keep it watching on them, keep your eyes on them, and just let them know that you're not by yourself. You're with somebody because you've got that cell phone, and you could be identifying whoever you're looking at. So that's one time that you can use it to your advantage. But the vulnerability thing, I mean, they always look for the weakest person they can go after, and it's just something that you you have to realize, and when you fail to plan, you plan to fail. You make yourself a target. So everything you guys have been saying just goes along with everything we teach our students.
Yeah, and I'll reinforce that. Anybody can go out to the local mall and sit down and watch people, do a little people watching, and play a little game. Who would I victimize today? Are you going to victimize the person that's got their head up, alert, looking around, not seeming like they're intimidated or afraid, they look confident, going about their business, or are you going to pick on somebody who's got their face on the phone with their earbuds in, not paying attention to what's going on around them at all, or they got their hands full to the hilt, or they look like they're lost? Don't be that person that looks like they're lost. Don't be that person that's distracted with their phone, with their face in the phone. Don't be that person, because that's the person the bad guy's going to pick on, not the person that looks confident. And that's just another way and another opportunity that you can use not to need to use deadly force or any force, because the bad guy's going to avoid you and pick on somebody else. And let them pick on that other person. Just make sure you and your loved ones aren't that other person that's being the fool out in public looking like a sheep.
I mean, a Christmas season with everybody shopping and carrying packages and looking around and lost, I mean, you're setting everything up, and then they take it back to the vehicle, and somebody's watching. They put it in the vehicle and either leave the vehicle unlocked or leave everything wide open to do, and then all of a sudden it goes dark or whatever. I mean, again, just like you guys are saying, it's a crime magnet. I mean, we can't
avoid it. It's out there. It's everywhere. And if you are carrying a weapon in your pocket, or you're carrying a weapon somewhere on you, if you go out there and you're not willing to use it, you might as well leave it home. And what's going to happen if you don't become hyper-vigilant and watch your surroundings? You're going to end up giving that weapon to the bad guy. It's not enough to carry a weapon on you, because people can go after it. I see people in Walmart walk around with a big weapon on their side, a 44 Magnum or something, and that would be the first thing I'd go after probably. He's making a target out of himself, really. And I understand that he's trying to tell everybody, I'm packing and blah, blah, blah. But that really doesn't bother me too much, because I've seen too many people hesitate. Good people hesitate, Doug, because they know when they pull that trigger, their life just changed. The bad guy had that figured out when he left the house. He could care less. And so if he's a split second faster than you are, you're gonna get yourself hurt or killed. So you got to have a mindset. If you're going to do it, you better be willing to take it all the way.
That's the whole thing, and then deal with the consequences afterwards.
You have to. It's justifiable homicide sometimes, especially if a guy jumps on you and's got a record of anything. I mean, he's already known as a bad guy. You're not going to go to jail for that thing unless you shoot him three or four times laying on the ground or something. But once he's on the ground, you have to kind of let it go. But call 911, whatever you're going to do. But if you're going to carry a weapon with you, you better make sure you're going to use it. If you're not going to use it, the bad guy will.
That's yeah, so we're starting thing. Now. Say we're going to get onto the force and force, but the first thing we have to do, we have the basic training, right, John?
I encourage it anyway. I mean, some states don't require it to get a concealed carry license. Of course, not everybody even gets a concealed carry license. So, you know, you've got some people out there that don't have a license. They've got maybe a gun at home. Actually, there's some people that don't even have a gun at home. But I think a lot of Americans, especially with the terror attacks of last week and some of the current events going on in the world, you know, more and more Americans, I think, are waking up to the fact that this kind of violence can happen even in their towns, and they are deciding that they don't want to go down without a fight. They're going out and buying guns. But, yeah, ideally, they're going to get some training. They're going to learn the fundamentals of using their firearms safely, effectively, efficiently to protect themselves and their families. And then, hopefully, they're going to go on and get continued training to make themselves an even harder target, more difficult for the bad guys to go after, because not only do we have to worry about the lunatics today, but we also have to worry about the gangbangers that seem to be proliferating,
right,
especially with the heroin trade. And now we've got some radical Islamic types that are going out there looking to do mass spree killings in public as well. So, I mean, there's all kinds of threats out there. You just have to, first of all, get your head out of the sand and recognize that there are threats out there that potential risk to you and your family, and to take steps to make your family a little safer.
Well, let's talk on force training, John. I mean, you're the instructor, you're the expert on this, as far as I know. Talk about it a little. What does it consist of? What does it entail, and what should people look for when they go for this type of training, and then where they can get it?
Well, force on force training refers to the fact that you're actually engaging in training and you're firing projectiles at one another. You've got the students that are in the force-on-force class that are the good guys. You've got aggressors that are in the force-on-force class that are the bad guys. And then you've got role players that are just bystanders, if you will. And the force-on-force part comes in where you use either simulated munitions, or simunitions is kind of their trade name. They fire basically paintball cartridges at high speeds that leave marks on the person when they hit. And they're also very painful as well. And there's also a kind of a second level of force-on-force using airsoft. And those airsoft firearms fire little, I think, 6-millimeter plastic pellets at about 300 or 400 feet per second. They hurt when you get hit with them. If you get hit with them on bare skin, they'll oftentimes leave welts or maybe even cause a little bit of bleeding. But it teaches people to take the training, the tactics, and the exercise seriously, because nobody wants to feel that pain when they get hit. There's that pain penalty for screwing up. And so the students take the scenarios very seriously, and it inspires a lot of physiological responses very similar to what somebody experiences when they're in fear for their life in a critical threat or a critical incident out in public. In the real world, you get the adrenaline dump a little bit, you get a little bit of fear, you get a little bit of shaking, you get nervousness, all these things that people experience in real life in a critical incident, and you do that in class with these airsoft pistols with proper protective gear, of course. Everybody wears masks, and with some people wear gloves. We recommend that, and you outfit them out appropriately. And you put them into the different scenarios. And we've got in our classes scenarios for a gas station fill-up, an ATM, hotel rooms, convenience stores is one of our favorites. We love to do restaurant scenes. Those are a lot of fun. All kinds of stuff. For instance, walking out of Walmart. I'll give you one of the scenarios. We put the students in a Walmart. We give them a couple of plastic bags full of paper towels and diapers. And we tell them to go out to their car, and they walk out the door. And when they walk out of the door, there's a woman there with a baby, and it's not a real baby. It's a pinata filled with sand, so it kind of looks like a baby. It feels like a baby. It's just not a real baby. So we've got a woman there, and she runs up to the student. She says, "Help me, help me. My baby's not breathing." And the scenario gets a little more complicated when her boyfriend comes along momentarily and starts cussing at her, asking her what the hell she did to cause the baby to start choking. And if the student in this scenario does not escort her back into the store to get her help and take control of the situation by having the boyfriend call 911 and try to defuse the situation a little bit, the boyfriend will continue to escalate. And the next thing you know, he, who happens to be carrying a handgun, he will start to get a little bit more violent, and the student has to handle the situation. So it's one of those complicated things where, you know, there's no perfect answer, but what we're striving for in this is to get the students to step up, to take control of the situation, to assign tasks to people involved, to keep them busy, to keep them focused on task, instead of letting things devolve into something bad. We've got another scenario where it's a gas station fill-up, and in one version of the scenario, you've got a baby in the back seat in a car seat. In another scenario, there's nobody in the car, and the difference there is you surrender the vehicle, so to speak, if somebody's giving you a hard time while you're filling up with gas. Walk away from the car as it's being filled up. I mean, the car should already be locked. You just walk away from the car into the store and call 911 if necessary. Or it's very different if you've got a loved one that can't look out for themselves in the vehicle. At that point, you have to negotiate and figure out some sort of a solution to this, and it usually involves putting the car between you and the bad guy and working it out in terms of verbal commands, telling the bad guy to leave and go away, and come up with a solution there to protect the baby and yourself from this person that wants to basically shake you down for a robbery of some sort while you're filling up with gas. And that stuff happens on a fairly regular basis, especially in the bigger cities. So, I mean, there are valuable lessons here. The scenarios aren't always clear-cut, and there's opportunities there to do a lot of different things, and we have a lot of fun with it. So we put up the scenarios there for the students. We give them an opportunity to handle it or do well in it, but if they screw up tactically or if they make stupid decisions, we tell the aggressors to go ahead and light them up at that point. So, you know, that's one of the things that we do. But the bad guys in these classes, in these scenarios, they aren't just bad guys that are standing around waiting to pull out a gun and blast the student. They're all exhibiting pre-violence indicators. And these are some things that we teach in these classes to be on the lookout for when you're out in public. You're looking around at people. You're watching for people that are acting out of the ordinary, walking or looking without a sense of purpose is one general thing. But one of the things that the bad guys oftentimes do right before they strike is a little bit of grooming. They'll be touching their face or their neck when they're doing this. I mean, it's just a kind of an unconscious, nonverbal communication. These people don't even realize they're doing it, but it's one of the things they do. Another thing they do is blading of the feet or loading. You know, they kind of cock that one foot back like they're getting ready to take a swing on you. That can oftentimes happen in bar disputes or whatever, especially if you put young men and women together and a little alcohol, you get people doing stupid things. Another thing is the target glance, where they'll be looking around for witnesses and or the approval of their co-conspirators that are involved in this attack, because, of course, bad guys don't always travel by themselves. They oftentimes have other compatriots along. Body preparation is another thing. You know, they'll pump their fists, they'll shrug their shoulders. You know, it's almost like they're trying to psych themselves up to go ahead and follow through on this attack. And furtive movements at the waist, that's another big one. You know, they'll be in their waistband holding on to either a knife or a gun or some other weapon. They don't want you to see the weapon until they come out right up to you. And so they'll be concealing their hands with furtive movement in the waistband or in pockets. You know, watch their hands. Always watch their hands. You know, you might be able to look at their soul through their eyes, but the eyes aren't going to hurt you. It's the hands that are what are going to hurt you. So always be watching those hands. That is probably the single best thing you can do if you got somebody that you got a real funny feeling about. They're acting strangely. Watch their hands. That'll tell you so much.
I mean, you've gone through a lot of things, but the bad thing about all this, often these incidents, they all start and they're over within seconds. So we're looking 30, 40, 50 seconds, maybe a minute, maybe 2 minutes from the beginning of an incident until the whole thing is over. And the amount of time you have to make a decision and act is extraordinarily limited.
But with training and recognizing some of these pre-violence indicators and, again, having that training, your mind can do amazing things. I mean, if you turn and knock a vase off of a shelf or something, your body is on that instantly to grab that vase without thinking about it or analyzing it. I mean, you know what to do subconsciously, and you just do it. And if you get good training, you'll do the same thing with pre-violence indicators. You'll spot these things and you'll be able to react to them almost instantaneously. And again, you may only have 5 or 10 seconds for the whole encounter, but if you take preemptive action immediately in terms of, you know, countering the approach of the bad guy or doing something along those lines, something as simple as crossing the street or avoiding the confrontation or going back into the store instead of continuing closer to the potential attack, you can make these decisions, take these actions, and not even be involved in an encounter simply because you took yourself out of the equation, and that's the best way to win a gunfight, frankly.
Well, Ray, I mean, you're the one that both won and lost the gunfights, for real. I mean, you know, as you said over and over again on the radio show, as we've done all the things over the years, preparing the plan, getting a plan together is the whole key thing, yeah. Isn't it?
It is. And one thing, when he was speaking all about this, I mean, it was right on. But what I was thinking was, in the martial arts, what we tell people is, it's not enough just to do it 3 times. You have to literally, you have to practice what you're going to do. Because when the time comes, you will do what you normally do. You've got to be able to at least have a mindset. You've got to work on it. I'm sure he would agree with that, that whatever you're going to do, you've got to work on that thing, and so you'll know what to do. You know, in Vietnam, when we're moving through the bush and you're in a column and you're in a combat situation there, and a sniper round fires, wham, and everybody hits a deck. Somebody just went down, and they're hollering, sniper, sniper. So you're constantly looking around you. The idea is the Marine Corps always taught us, never retreat. Always go forward, move forward. You'll find your enemy. You got to eliminate him. If you don't practice that, you'll do what you normally do. You'll either lay there or you'll run backwards. And so you have to practice. Whenever the time comes to use some of these things, you know, we have people sometimes will come in and take 3 or 4 weeks or something in martial arts, and they think they're Bruce Lee or somebody, and they leave out of there. They resort always back to the way they've done it. You've got to not only have a plan, but you really have to be part of your mindset is what you're going to do, what you're going to do. And one thing we tell them, Doug, is what he was just talking about. The safest place to be when trouble comes is somewhere else. And, you know, if some guy is going to beat up a woman in public like that, well, call 911, get some help in there, do something, because, well, I've seen it many times where you would jump into a fracas like that, a man and a woman, and she ended up beating on you too. When you start whipping on her husband. So you have to get somebody in there in Walmart. You can get associates. You can get district people in there. And you're not on your own. You're not in there. Because I saw on one situation where a guy, it was actually a cop and a drug dealer, and they were wrestling on the ground. And one of them had a weapon, the cop did. And so the a guy ran up to him, and he said, "What do you mean to do? What do you do?" And the cop threw the pistol out. And because of the way these two guys were dressed, the guy thought the cop was the bad guy. And he ended up shooting the bad guy, he shot the cop. Because they were both hollering, and he didn't know who to shoot. And the guy was hollering, get him, shoot him, shoot him. And he did. And so when you run up on a situation like that, it's very confusing. You're not sure what to do, but you've got to keep your head together. And so practice, practice, practice. Bad things will come. In my little town, we have 28 gangs operating in this town, and it's Bloods, it's Crips, and all the other different kind of gangs. And bad things do happen quite often, but it happens in generally a lot of different places in town. So I stay away from those places most of the time, unless I absolutely have to. You have to be ready for trouble, but don't go looking for it.
Absolutely. I agree 100% on a couple of points that you raised there. You know, I've taken a little bit of Krav Maga and been doing it for, going on 6 months now, and it's very counterintuitive to advance towards somebody that's raising a stick to hit you with it or raising a knife.
Yeah.
Very counterintuitive to approach them. And Walmart, getting back to the Walmart thing in our scenario, Walmart has people that are trained to deal with medical incidents or things of that nature. And if you walk into a Walmart and say, "Help, help, I need medical help now," they're trained people are going to run towards that, and they're going to be there to help you.
Right.
So if you've got a baby that's not breathing, get that baby back into the store. There'll be people there to help you. There'll be people to call 911, and there'll be trained people there to take care of that baby. And so, you know, that's just one instance, and we, of course, got a domestic battery scenario in our classes, but Domestics are terribly dangerous. It's very tempting to get involved, to tell one party or the other to back off or to quit hitting or quit beating. But the best way to approach a domestic violence encounter is don't approach it. Stay back, way, way back, because if they got a knife or a meat cleaver, they can be on you faster than you can imagine possible, even if you're 25, 30 feet away. So stay far, far away. Obstacles between you and them. Call 911. Wait for the police to arrive and just try to stay out of it as much as possible. And at the same time, be looking around, because maybe the aggressive boyfriend or the aggressive female have friends there who don't really cotton to strangers taking a gander calling 911 on their friends. So be aware of your surroundings and who's around you, because you might end up getting jumped by one of the bickering couple's friends, and that would be a bad day for the home team as well.
I mean, it's the same thing. When we're calling 911, I think we have to realize, depending on where you live, I mean, just because you dial 911 doesn't mean there's going to be help there. I mean, if you're in a rural area, we're looking at 20, 25-minute response time. You're in a big city where there are stations of police all over. It might be 3 or 4 or 5 minutes. But all these incidents are over within 90 seconds or 2 minutes in most cases. So it's
I don't know where you live for a 5-minute response, but they don't happen around here.
Well, Doug, one thing, in the martial arts, we always practice about somebody walking up behind you, and you can hear them come up behind you, and all of a sudden you'll hear their feet running, and they're getting closer. And so you have to step to the side and turn toward him, and generally he'll run. Once you feel his fingertips touch your shoulders and you step to the side, he's going to go past you, and then you're able to reset yourself. You have to be able to know what people are going to do when they come towards you, when somebody's charging you, when somebody's charging from the rear. That's why it's good to take these martial art classes. I'm not talking about some of these commercial kind of things. These are real stuff. I study Okinawan Shorinru Karate, and it's considered a hard style. And the Israeli type that he was talking about, that is hard style stuff. If you really want to know how to defend yourself, and we also teach children, and I'm not talking about how to fight and how to do these things, Doug, but what happens when an adult tries to grab a child? How does that child react? And one of the things we get them to do is not try to fight the guy, because the guy is 3 times his size. The child drops to the floor, puts his leg around the guy, or, you know, wrapped his leg around him. He grabs both arms around the guy's leg, and he bites a big hunk out the back of that guy's leg. And the guy is trying to run. He's trying to beat the kid off of him. You can't fight some people. They're just too big. But what you can do is learn tools to help you out. Everything becomes your friend. Everything becomes a weapon that you can pick up, whether it's a pencil, whether it's a broomstick, whatever it is. But you've got to learn. You have to be proactive. Get your family involved in some of these. Our dojo teaches self-defense classes for women, for children, for adults. And it's not all about just kicking and punching and blocking and all this stuff. We do full contact. But, you know, that's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is self-defense. And it's imperative that we do be proactive and at least get your family involved and get them educated.
So I was a betting man. I'd say you're probably teaching your students to be aware of their surroundings so they don't have to use the martial arts. Am I right?
Do what now? I'm sorry.
I said if I was a betting man, I would say you probably train your students to be aware of their surroundings so they don't need to use the martial arts in the first place.
That's
Am I true. Right?
That is part of your self-defense, is to realize some of the bad situations. And if you know, you know, if you know a bar, you like to drink, and you know a bar is good for big fights and all this kind of stuff, don't go in the place, man. Some guys just want to, you know, try somebody out, or they want to show them what they're going to do. And, you know, what we teach them is a soft answer turns away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. It comes out of Proverbs. And what it's saying is a lot of altercations can end peacefully if you just keep your mouth shut for a minute. And be humble. Be humble. If you're humble, you don't have so far to fall when you get knocked down or something. And people will actually jump in there and help you out. So it's when you're proud and when you get in there and you start getting them nose to nose and face to face and hollering and screaming, everybody will stand back and wait to see what happens. But we teach them how to, you've got to get your opponent close to you. That's what we teach in the martial arts. I mean, I'm comfortable when the guy is about 2 inches from my nose. That's where I want him at anyway, because now I can use everything I have. But when he's standing back from me, I can't do a whole lot to him. I'm too old for him, one thing. And so you have to be able to bait him. You have to be able to get him close to you. But a lot of things can just, And one of the things you can talk about to help your defense is to just continue to say, hey, dude, I don't want no trouble with you. I don't want no problem. I don't want no trouble. Because you may need some witnesses to go to court with you, and they'll say, look, this guy was telling him he didn't want no trouble. Now, just because you called the guy Bubba once in a while and you baited him, they don't even recognize that. You know, you say, well, I don't want no trouble, Bubba. And he's like, my name's not Bubba. It's like, well, you look like Bubba. And so you're actually baiting the guy, but you don't want it to appear that way. Because you may have to go to court, and you need somebody in your defense. So just be humble. Be nice.
Just keep your hands up and retreat slowly, and witnesses who may not be able to hear what you're saying will see what you're doing, and they can testify to that, or they can talk to the police officers about that show up that, yeah, this guy had his hands up kind of in the surrender position, and he was backing up, and this other guy advanced on him and kept coming, and all of a sudden the guy with his hands up pulled out his gun, or he whipped up on him with the martial arts. And so, you know, the other guy was trying to defuse the situation, but the aggressor just kept aggressing, and that's what got him in trouble, absolutely. But paying attention to your surroundings, avoiding that situation. But my personal thing, because I've got tools available to me, both in the martial arts skills, my weapons in terms of knives and guns, you know I've got stuff to fall back on, so I'm much more comfortable being relaxed, being calm, trying not to be, de-escalate the situation, but I'm calm doing all that because I know I've got options, whereas people who haven't trained, who haven't prepared, don't have any options, and very quickly they get overwhelmed in that situation, and they get scared to death, and they don't know what to do, and next thing you know, they're helpful little victims.
Right.
Let's, through a general class, I mean, the individual arrives for your class, and you're going to run them through a scenario to determine what their basic skills are. What happens next, or just take us through a weekend scenario, a weekend structure of class?
Well, first thing we do in the threat recognition and management class is to sit them down in the classroom section and go over the ground rules. You know, we're going to be frisking everybody, looking for any sort of live blades or real firearms. We don't want any of those in the force-on-force arena. Everybody gets searched, talk to them about the rules and rules of the road, so to speak. You know, don't beat up the role players too badly. If you know martial arts, you know, go slowly, don't hurt anybody. You know, do some of those things. And then we take them outside and we show them the Tooler drill. We show them the 21-foot rule and how quickly somebody can be upon you, and show them how quickly somebody can be on you, and some tactics and techniques you can use to lengthen that amount of time, because time equals distance equals time, time equals options, options mean safety. So we cover that. And while we're doing that, our other instructors are out with the role players and aggressors teaching them on certain scenarios. We want them to exhibit some of these pre-assault cues. We want them to be doing some grooming. We want them to do furtive movements. We want them to do body preparation, target glance, all these things, so that way the students can later in the day say, yeah, after we debrief them after the thing, they'll say, yeah, I saw that, come to think of it. And, you know, it's part of the learning process for the students. And from there, we throw them into, you know, six or seven scenarios. We put it like a golf course there where we do this actually to summer camp, an Easter SEAL summer camp, where we've got cabins, we've got open areas, we've got areas where we can do parking lots. We've got all kinds of options where the students can't see the other scenarios going on. Sometimes they can hear the screaming, but they can't see the scenarios going on. And it's like a golf course, and you go from scenario one to scenario two and all the way around the circuit there in the morning. And then we break for lunch, and after lunch we come back. We do a couple hours of Krav Maga, teaching some fundamental steps and things you can do. The fence, for instance, first strikes, basic kicks, basic strikes, and then we go into lectures on threat recognition and management. We talk about all kinds of important stuff there, mindset issues. We talk about the judicious use of deadly force, because a lot of these people in these classes, you know, we'll drill them, and they'll pull out a gun on somebody just aggressively panhandling that has no weapon, and the student has no business pulling a gun on somebody that's just trying to panhandle them. So, you know, we cover the judicious use of deadly force so they know the rules about using deadly force, be it a gun, a knife, or whatever, on a bad guy. Then Sunday morning, we come in. There's more lecturing. We do live fire Sunday morning where we teach them some fundamental tactics that we've dry fire practiced a little bit on. We teach them about flanking targets. We teach them about moving off of the X. We teach them communication skills. We teach them how to escort a loved one from a deadly situation. You know, it'd be having the gun out with one hand while the other hand's guiding a loved one to a safer location. So, you know, we teach them some of these things about movement as well. We go out, we do it live fire, and then we come back, have lunch. We frisk everybody, make sure there's no live guns, and then basically we rerun the scenarios from Saturday morning with the students having these new tools at their disposal about how to handle a critical incident. And that way they're able to better handle the situation and have a more satisfactory outcome. Translation, the students don't get shot up so bad. And it works out very well. And then after we run through the scenarios, we have a debrief session where people talk about, you know, what they picked up in the class, what they thought the strong points were, how to improve the class. We talk about all that stuff, and at that point, the class is pretty much over. But we cover just a ton of stuff, and we have the volunteers there. We've got probably on the order of 30 or 40 volunteers that come out and help as either aggressors or role players. We've got a group from the University of Illinois, a bunch of college kids that love to do airsoft. They come out and we train them how to exhibit these pre-violence indicators, and they just eat this up because they think this is just the greatest thing since sliced bread. This is what they live for. They are the aggressors with the ROTC kids at the U of I doing some improvised force-on-force training for that they do through the military program there at the U of I. So, you know, we're getting all kinds of good people helping us to teach civilians how to be better equipped to handle a potential incident in their lives and how to defuse, de-escalate, avoid a situation without needing to go to guns. But if they need to go to guns, teaching them some of the fundamentals about how to go about doing that with a satisfactory result.
Wow. Thank you, John.
Yeah, that's quite a weekend, I'll tell you what. You know, one thing I could just recommend maybe what I was thinking when you were talking all this, and you probably do it, but at the end of the class, I would recommend that these people at least get together once a month and just go over what they've learned. You know, that they would continue on training what they've learned. And, you know, one person can't remember it all, so when you get several people together on their own, at their own houses or whatever, and because if you don't practice, a lot of that will be gone within a matter of weeks or months. And all of it's valuable stuff. You know,
Of it will, absolutely. We try to give them some tasks they can do at a range. We call them skill sustainment drills that we do at the ranges. But frankly, these people come from all across Illinois even out of state. We had one guy drive as far away from us as Ohio. You know, he spent the better part of 6 or 8 hours driving to come over to the class on that weekend because, frankly, there's not a lot of force-on-force training available to civilians in the whole nation. You know, I did a brief search on the Internet. I know of a company down south that does this, a couple over in Indiana, a couple north up in Chicago that offer irregular classes, but nobody's doing this seriously or on as large a scale as we are. And we're just lucky that we have the big cadre of instructors that you have to have to run a big class like this, the volunteers to come out and play role players. You know, if you're just doing a force-on-force class where there's three people in the scenario, the instructor, the student, and the bad guy, it doesn't take a lot of rocket surgery to figure out who's the bad guy and where the threat's going to come from. And lastly, we've got the location. We've got a wonderful Easter SEALs camp here that we got lots of cabins. We've got open areas. We got acres and acres of woodlands. We got all kinds of stuff there to do all kinds of different scenarios, everything from water's edge to cabins to out in the woods. We've got a lot of stuff there, and a lot of places that have these classes don't have that either the role players, they don't have the instructors, or they don't have the facilities, and we're lucky enough we've got all three, and I think that's one of the things that makes this class one of the best in the nation at this point, and we're aggressively promoting it. We want to be nationally recognized, and that's kind of our goal, because more and more civilians need this training than ever, especially with the threats out there in the world today. There's all kinds of things that can go wrong in your life, and if you know how to handle them, it makes it a lot easier to come up with a satisfactory solution. It may not always be a good ending, but at least you're alive and you're not in jail and you're not getting sued, and all kinds of bad things aren't happening to your loved ones as well.
Well, Doug, I have to add one thing because it's part of my self-defense, and I'm a chaplain, so you know I'm going to do this. I start every morning on my knees because I've read before where if you bow before God in the morning, you can stand before anybody in the afternoon. It makes you a little more conscious. It makes you a little more sober-minded, and it just helps me tremendously. The Book of Proverbs, I make my students read the Book of Proverbs because it's got so much information for young people to avoid a lot of bad situations.
No argument there.
I have to tell, that's part of what we teach them in the martial arts is spirituality has a great deal to do with even the martial arts because it's a thing of beauty. It's a thing of power and strength, but it's also a thing of defense also. So I always have to include that in there.
Well, the other part we got to talk about, and this is the afterwards, and this is a critical incident debriefing or the PTSD or what are you going to have? I mean, Ray, you're the one that wrote the book on this. And when you get in an emergency situation, you've had to respond, you've got a whatever's happened, a robbery, a burglary, a shooting, a murder or something.
Yeah.
Hey, afterwards going to be all heck to pay, isn't there?
It is. If your adrenaline pumps, now there's two different types of pumping like that. One of them is intentional where you do things and it makes your adrenaline pump. Now, that's cool, that's wonderful, and that's kind of fun. But when trauma happens to you and your adrenaline pumps, there's a possibility of what they call post-trauma, of where a sight, a sound, a smell, this could be 20 years later or 10 or 5 years later, whatever. But something will remind you of that original trauma, and when that happens, your brain begins to produce adrenaline again, and that's called post-trauma. So you have to be ready for that. One of the only things that I've ever found that helped me with that, Doug, was oxygen. And you can't use oxygen all the time. And, you know, if there's a difference between being upset about something and then having an adrenaline pump. But oxygen will neutralize that adrenaline pump, especially when you don't want it. But also that nasal inhaler I told you about before, you can buy them at Walmart or anywhere. It's a menthol nasal inhaler, Vicks, different things. And when you breathe on that, that is not oxygen, but what it does, it opens up your sinuses and nasal passages so you can breathe. But when you do that, you get oxygen to your brain. So you will have repercussions. If you've been through a traumatic situation, it will affect you the rest of your life through these little triggers that cause your adrenaline to pump again. So you have to be ready for that when it happens because it will have all the signs of a panic attack. And it just follows trauma everywhere it goes.
That's something to remember. John, how do people get in touch with you? Give us contact information. We'll put this up on the website. Or how do they get in touch with you guys for training or information?
Probably the best way to get in touch with us is to check out our website. It's GSL Defense Training. That's George Sam Lincoln, GSLDefenseTraining.com. The GSL part, we're very big supporters of GunSaveLife.com. It's a regional gun rights organization. Many of our instructors are officers or directors or former officers or directors of Gun Save Life. We're real aggressive at promoting gun rights. In fact, our slogan, if you will, is "We defend your right to defend yourself." And this training organization, GSL Defense Training, is not part of Gun Save Life per se, but it is kind of a bunch of us that feel very strongly about the utility of firearms in the good hands and trained hands as a means to protect families and good people from bad people with bad evil in their hearts. And so GSLDefenseTraining.com is where you can find more information. There's pictures, course descriptions, course evaluations from our past students, all kinds of information there, including registration for the classes. We've got classes starting next April. I think we've got one in April and May, and then we've got another one in September and then October. So it's limited. Class size is limited. So if you're interested in this, get in touch with us or sign up, get registered. If you register, we'll mail you back a welcome packet with a map and directions of where to go, recommendations on what to bring, and hotel accommodations. And interestingly enough, this camp where we hold the class, they've got bunking facilities available to us for $25 a night. So you don't have to spend a bunch of money in a hotel to come out there. They take great care of us, and it's kind of like a summer camp experience. It really is a beautiful place out there, and it's wonderful, and it's a nice, relaxing place when people aren't shooting at you anyway.
That's pretty important.
Yeah, I could agree with that one. So.
Yeah, we've been there, done that, right,
I can see the
Ray?
Great experience what you have there. I'd love to go there sometime.
Yeah, I think all the things, the conversations we've had on this program in the past, we've had Frank Wright that's been on here talking about gun safety and all the legal aspects. He's one of the instructors with GSL and everything else. But it all comes down to it, John. You've got to know what you want to do. You've got to get the proper equipment. You've got to get the proper training to handle that equipment. You have to practice over and over and over again, not just by yourself, but with competent instructors can evaluate and correct problems.
Even a poor class is better than the best video, because you'll have live people there to critique your form and your technique, suggest improvements to improve what you're doing, so you're not practicing bad habits. And absolutely, you need to go out, you need to practice. Take some formal training. Don't try to teach your girlfriend or your wife how to shoot. Take them out, get them formal training with somebody that they're not intimately familiar with, and they'll learn better, you'll have a better time, they'll be safer, it'll be a better day. And I don't say that just because I'm an instructor. You don't have to come to our class. Just go to class somewhere. Get some training. The more training you have, the more you can fall back on that training instead of just pure dumb luck to overcome a critical incident and maybe save your life, and so you'll be around for the people who love you.
I think it's more and more, because all indications are the gun sales in the last month have skyrocketed beyond all comprehension. And the good guys, and we have to understand, the good guys that are buying guns, you have to go through a federal background instant check to buy a gun. So it's not just like you can go out there and buy one. All the procedures are in place to ensure that the good guys are getting them and the bad guys are not. Now, that doesn't mean the bad guys aren't going to get them.
That's true. Yeah. Bad guys will always find a weapon of some sort, and if they can't find a weapon, they'll buy something that looks like a weapon and paint it black and make it look like it's a real gun and still go off and commit their crimes, or they'll use a knife. I mean, those are everywhere. I mean, there have been 100 million guns sold since Barack Obama took office in 2009. It is what it is. It's a lot of things going on out there in the world right now, and if you're going to get a gun and depend on it, don't look at a magic talisman, but look at it as a tool and get some training to use that tool.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Ray. God bless everybody. And again, Warrior Connection moves forward for education. Thank you very much, Terry. God bless you all. Good night. Hey, baby.